Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. We're getting there. It's a couple more days before the Stanley Cup Final finally gets underway, at least this week. We know who the opponent is. St. Louis Blues will be here to start the series on Monday night. Judd Sirott, Bob Beers joining me here in the Town Fair Tire Studios as we do part two of our Stanley Cup preview here on the Hockey Show. Good morning, guys. You enjoyed your time off?
Working over Memorial Day is a good thing.
Yes. Absolutely. It's, perfect weekend. Monday's weather is supposed to be great. Great chance to get out and enjoy the city before Game 1 gets underway. I mean, this is the way it's supposed to be, right? 75 degrees and sunny and hockey's still playing.
I can't wait to see what the crowd is going to be like for Game 1 coming in off of Memorial Day weekend. Spectacular.
Absolutely.
Coming in off of a almost sold out scrimmage the other day.
Amazing.
What a great
people are ready
that
for
was.
This, huh?
Yeah. Amazing. And it's, you know, it look, for a town that has had as much success as this one has had in from all of its teams, to still be that jazzed up about a trip to the finals that they show up en masse for a scrimmage, for a glorified practice is It just really does speak to how much people are feeling it right now.
It's, I mean, I think Bruins fans are unique anyhow, right? I mean, they're going to be there. The parade in 2011 was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, they've been waiting for this for a couple of years. They've rallied around this team. This team is a likable group, a very likable group. They're, you know, blue collar, lunch pail, go to work, you know, put the work boots on, and they better be ready for this series because it's going to be big boy hockey. It's, you just kind of look at St. Louis, and there's some numbers coming out today, and I'm sure we'll get into a lot of it. But, I mean, to me, the whole series, Ryan, is about the depth of both teams. You know, St. Louis has a fourth, they'll call it the fourth line, that is used a lot like the Bruins use the Corrali line. You know, regularly they are getting more ice time than the second and third line. Mm-hmm. And that's the same with the Bruins and the way that they've utilized the Corrali line. So, I mean, the depth on both teams, the numbers on both teams that stand out, 19 different players for the Bruins have scored a goal in this playoff. 18 different players have scored a goal for the Blues in the playoffs. They're here because of their depth, their toughness, their willingness to play different kind of ways. I think it's going to be a great series.
I think it's always fascinating to hear what some of the coaches who have played some of these teams have said after they've been eliminated. And Peter DeBoer had mentioned that the two heaviest teams in the playoffs are the two teams that are in the finals. And incidentally, the two heaviest teams are also the two least penalized. So they've been playing disciplined hockey within a physical structure.
Well, we hear so much, and it's true if you kind of look around the league at what the skill level of the players is in this league. And, you know, you think about some of the young top-end talent around this league, and it's an exciting product to watch. But yet, when you get to the end, both of these teams have high-end talent, but they also have guys who are further down the list. Like you're talking about guys where third and fourth line guys that can contribute. They can score. They can play. It's not just grinders. They are going to go out there and give you, you know, a solid, you know, 14, 15, 16 minutes a night, guys that are on the third and fourth lines. It's not a top-heavy group on either one of these teams anymore.
But how do you you know, how do those guys contribute on the score sheet as well? Or how do they contribute throughout the game
sure.
to get those minutes? And it's not just, you know, when I talk about a physical series, it's not just throwing big hits. And there will be hits, you know, no question. I mean, St. Louis had a game plan that they were going to take out Erik Karlsson every time he was on the ice. And, you know, they certainly put the body on him plenty of times. And not just him, but, you know, throughout the game. But it's you know, coaches talk, okay, toughness comes in different ways. It's not the guy that's going to throw the big hit all the time. It's the guy that's going to take a hit to make a play. It's a guy that's going to, you know, willing to block the shot, you know, at a certain time. It's a guy that's, you know, going to make sure that he wins his battles along the boards to make sure the puck gets out or the puck gets in. There's all those little things, and there's going to be so many battles along the boards, and I think that that's going to be such a big part of this series. And then the skill comes out as well, top to bottom. But this game, like I said, or this series, there's just going to be so much work along the wall. There's going to be so many battles to be won throughout. I think that it's not two teams. I mean, I think both teams can skate. I think both teams have some speed, especially when, you know, the passes are connecting and they can get through the neutral zone quickly. But there's going to be a lot of work along the wall in this one.
Well, if you look at the Corrali line, how many times during the course of this postseason have we seen them go out and give you a shift where the other team spends 30, 45 seconds in their defensive zone? They just can't find a window to clean it out. And sometimes you get a goal out of that, sometimes you don't, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's a wasted shift for the other team, usually against a really good line, but also just the impact of them having to work that hard can really pile up during the course of a game and during the course of a series.
Well, you saw that a lot, especially in the second round against Columbus, because when Corrali was out there, and a lot of times, listen, Seth Jones was playing about 30 minutes every night, but when those guys were out there, they forced Jones to play at least the first 30 seconds of his shift in his D zone. So if he was able to get the puck out and send it in, he had to change, and he did that a lot, and it helped wear down Jones as that series progressed.
All right, so I mean, the biggest storyline to this point, I mean, is clearly the layoff and the impact that it's going to have. The Bruins had the scrimmage the other night in an effort to try and kind of get back into that game day mentality, that game day routine. So, you know, I think it was, I heard Pasternak talking about it afterwards, saying, you know, just doing the whole thing, getting a nap during the day, coming to the arena for a night thing instead of going to a morning practice. It's, you know, it's a little different. Is there any way to really combat this, though? I mean, the scrimmage is fine for what it was, but is there any way for them to really combat having a week and a half layoff between games and try and keep some semblance of the momentum that they had going for the first three rounds?
No.
Yeah.
There's not. I mean, you know, they'll practice hard. You know, the pace will be good. That's something that they talked about, you know, maintaining that pace. You know, but the intensity level when you're facing the St. Louis Blues on game one on Monday night is going to be just a different level altogether. I mean, it was good, I think, from a sense that they changed up, you know, the same old, you know, routine that they've been going through here, trying to find different ways. And for me, you know, I thought it was a good idea just to have the routine, the game day routine. You know, wake up in the morning, go to the morning skate, whether you skate or not, you have your routine in the morning. Go through some meetings, you know, power play, penalty, whatever meetings you go through. Have your meal, take your nap, go to the rink, get ready, prepared for a game like you would if it was a regular game. That routine for players is important. You know, a lot of it is made of superstition. It's more just the routine of a game day. And they've been doing this for every other day. And all of a sudden now, you know, now they've got 12 days in between. St. Louis has 6 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it's 6 days. So, I mean, there is a difference there, but there's no way to simulate game conditions. That's the best that they could do.
And, well, I mean, even if there wasn't as long of a layoff, there's really no way to simulate, especially playoff
intensity.
Game conditions.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go out and you can, you know, set up situations, or you can just drop the puck and let them play essentially a game against each other, but you don't have the same level of intensity. You don't have the same level of battle and hitting and things like that that are going to go on. There's no way to simulate that.
Even a six-day break is basically the equivalent of what we see across an NHL bye week. And we see every team come back after the bye week, and they're going to deal with some timing and rhythm issues. So whether it's 10 or 6, both are going to be dealing with those physical issues getting back into the game. Maybe take a period, maybe take a period and a half to get back. I think the biggest issue is for both of these teams, so you had a chance to relax, rest, gather yourself, recover. How do you get back into that mental rhythm that you had across the first three rounds of the playoffs? I think that will be a bigger issue for both of these teams. How do they get back into that mentality that they had both against Carolina for the Bruins in that third round and for the Blues against the San Jose Sharks? How quickly are you able to recapture what you had in those rounds mentally? I think that that's something that bears watching.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more because I want to get into the goaltenders and in particular Tuukka Rask because that's what he's up against. I mean, giving a goalie that amount of time off, especially one who has been as dominant as he has over the last couple of rounds. We'll get into that coming up. Of course, we're here to take your calls throughout 617-779-0985. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show pre-final edition.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Back of the net now, Slavin. Puck intercepted by the Bruins. Out in front. Pastrnak shoots. They score! Patrice Bergeron, after the puck was turned over, took a pass at the bottom of the left wing circle from David Pastrnak. And Bergeron hammers it home. Bruins 3, Hurricanes nothing for Bergeron. Second of the night.
As you get older, you appreciate it even more, and you realize how hard it is to get to this point and to advance. And you got to be thankful. And obviously, you want to stay in the moment, and that's the biggest thing. You know, right now we're going to appreciate this tonight, but then it's back to work, and there's a lot of work in front of us.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here on a Saturday morning until 11 o'clock. 617-779-0985. Heard from Patrice Bergeron there. Getting another crack at a Stanley Cup. His would be his second, obviously. Got some guys on this team that going through this for the third time. Not as much experience on the other side. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up. But Judd, just before the break, was mentioning the, you know, kind of the mental aspect of it. And, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, you haven't played a game in, you know, in 6 days and 11 days. And, you know, it takes you a little bit of time to get your feet back under you, to get the timing down, tape-to-tape passes and things like that. But the mental aspect of it does definitely enter into it here, and that's where I think in particular the goaltender comes in. Tuukka Rask has been as good as and better than anybody could have imagined in this postseason, and he's been rolling. Can't ask for anything more. So giving him a week and a half off, how does that impact what we have seen out of him in this postseason? Because for most of the season, it's been kind of, you know, one game or two games on, game off, right? I mean, the way that Bruce Cassidy worked with he and Halak, those guys were, you know, they're very rare where one guy got an extended amount of starts and the other guy had to sit. So Tuukka not seeing game action over the course of 11 games, how does he stay mentally focused through that? Is he the same guy when they come back on Monday that we've seen throughout this postseason?
It's something I'm keeping an eye on. I mean, no question. I mean, it's got to be a concern. Let's put it that way. I mean, I don't think people are worried, but it's got to be something that you got to keep an eye on. I mean, he did have, there's precedent. I mean, he had it earlier in the season, mm-hmm. the injury with the concussion plus the bye week, you know, when he came back after that, but he came back, you know, where they played both of them, like you were just saying, and they've done it. They did that all season, but this is the most days off anybody's had in between games. So there's really no blueprint for it. I don't know how he's going to come back. I mean, he's been outstanding this playoff. I mean, he's just been in his zone, and you know, there's no way around it. You got to get through it and got to get ready. I mean, just prepare the best way you can, and you know, try to find that level as quickly as you can. But I don't, from a goaltender's perspective, I don't think any of us can answer that.
I mean, I feel like so much of that position and so much of what we've seen out of him in the playoffs so far is based around the level of confidence. I mean, you can tell oftentimes with a goaltender by the way that he's challenging, by the way that he's moving, by the way that, as has been the case for much of these playoffs, his positioning is just right and the pucks are hitting him in the chest. You can tell that a goalie is feeling it. And, you know, I'd hate to imagine that he's not going to have that same level of confidence, but I know for me, it just feels like the last game of that Carolina series took place so long ago. I can't even imagine what it's like for the players to be in that same boat and feel like it feels like it's been weeks since we've done anything meaningful.
Goaltenders are a different breed. Maybe
we have to think
about adding a goaltender to get the goaltending perspective to the hockey show, because remember, they speak a different language. A lot of the times, it's not just Bruce Cassidy, but a lot of coaches around the National Hockey League, they'll have their goaltending coach talk with their goaltenders to figure out the way they're starting, how they're feeling, how to get them into rhythm, whatever the case may be. But they speak their own language. So maybe we need to add that perspective to the hockey show for every Stanley Cup final.
Well, from the flip side, Binnington has been an amazing story this year, getting his opportunity, taking the most of it, and, you know, getting them into a Stanley Cup final. And he has been, if you kind of compare the two guys side by side, they've both, in their 12 postseason wins this year, have given up a total of 19 goals. They have been terrific when they've needed to be. Difference is that Binnington's thrown a couple of clunkers in there. He's given up 6 goals against Winnipeg, gave up 5 goals twice in that San Jose series, the only two games they lost in that series. So he's, you know, but he's, when he's been good, he's been on that same level over the course of the last 3 games that they won. He only allowed 2 goals on 77 shots. It's a .974 save percentage. He's in kind of in a similar boat in that he now gets almost a week off, but he's also not been through this before. And I'm interested to see how that affects him, because some guys, you know, as the stakes get higher, their game gets better. And as some guys, you know, they get into a moment where maybe it feels a little bit too big for them. We don't know really what Binnington's got at this level, because he's never been there before. At least we've got some evidence that Tuukka Rask can play at this level and has done it successfully over the course of his career. So I'm interested to see what Binnington brings to the table, because, as I said, he's been one of the better goaltenders for as long as he's been in the NHL this year, and certainly in the postseason.
I've had a chance to talk with a couple of people who coached Jordan Binnington on the way up, and it wasn't a function of talent for Binnington. I think the issue was between his ears, being able to focus on his game alone, not worry about what's going on around him. And when he finally got the opportunity, remember, he wasn't even on the radar for the St. Louis Blues when the season began. He was number 4 on the depth chart last year, basically farmed out to Providence as St. Louis Blues property, and had an opportunity to play there. And he didn't play the bulk of the starts either in Providence. But he was able to, you know, and I think for a lot of goaltenders, this is the case. Goaltenders, I remember Joe Quenneville talking about it. They're like fine wines. They get better with age. And I think that they get more mature. I think they understand that they need to focus on their game alone. And he was able to marshal the 6 inches between his ears along with the talent and seize the opportunity. And someone actually pointed out to me, had he not seized the opportunity in early January, he might have been sent down immediately. It could have been his last chance in the National Hockey League. The Blues were scuffling at that point. They were lurking. They were looking for some sort of a solution in net, something that would provide them some solid footing. And he was able to provide that. But if they brought him up and he didn't win, as soon as he started to get opportunities in early January, he's sent back immediately. and that could have been his last chance in the National Hockey League.
And look, there's something to be said for a guy, you know, seizing that opportunity. And it has happened where you get a, you know, a rookie or a younger guy who gets an opportunity like this and gets his team into the final and wins the cup. I mean, I think back to, you know, a guy like Cam Ward at the beginning of his career. You know, he got the opportunity and he seized it and basically, you know, made a career off of that. You know, that's the kind of level that Binnington is at right now, where, you know, if he has a few more games like he's had in this postseason, he could be Stanley Cup winning goaltender, having gone from, as you said, Judd, last year, they didn't even have a spot for him really in their organization. You know, it was just, oh, we're going to send you to the ECHL, right? We're going to send you all the way down. And he said, well, I'd rather not do that. And he ended up in Providence instead. But they were, you know, he clearly has not been, up until this year, on their radar as far as a guy that they looked at as a legitimate starting goaltender at this point in his career.
So the history of the Blues goaltending, at least here in the short term, is that Jake Allen was supposed to be the guy. When the playoffs hit, he was never able to find it.
Yep.
And then during the regular season, he faltered. There's a kid, their top prospect, per se, prior to this year, was a kid named Ville Husso. He'd been hurt a couple of times. That was part of what allowed Jordan Binnington the opportunity. Jake Allen not being able, you know, to take the ball and run with it. Husso getting hurt. Jordan Binnington gets the chance.
617-779-0985. We've got Judd and Bob with us here up until 11 o'clock as we continue on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Sports Hub Headlines.
Red Sox had their series opener against the Houston Astros last night, and although they almost erased a 4-0 deficit, ultimately fell 4-3. Yesterday evening, starter Chris Sale went 6 innings, allowing 3 hits, 4 runs, only 2 of those earned, as the Sox defense committed 3 errors. Boston closed the gap late on a trio of solar homers by Christian Vasquez, Xander Bogaerts, and Jackie Bradley Jr. Game 2 of the 3-game set tonight at 7:25. David Price on the mound versus Brad Peacock. In other Sox news, Dustin Pedroia on rehab assignment in the AA with the Portland Sea Dogs removed himself from the lineup after 4 innings last night. Was supposed to be in the lineup today, but just being announced that he will not be in the game today for the Portland Sea Dogs. New England Revolution have points in back-to-back games. We'll try and make it a 3-game streak when they host DC United tonight at 7:30 p.m. You can listen to the game right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Game 6 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Final between Milwaukee and Toronto tips off tonight in Canada at 8:25 p.m. Raptors have the 3-2 series lead. And will be looking to close things out for their first ever trip to the NBA Final in a matchup against the Golden State Warriors. And local college action, lacrosse specifically, a couple of local teams with a chance at a national title. After reigning Women's Player of the Year Sam Apuzzo scored in double overtime against North Carolina to send Boston College to its third straight championship game, the Eagles will face number one seed Maryland tomorrow for the title. And also tomorrow in D2 action, the Merrimack Warriors men's lacrosse team will face number one seeded Limestone. And one note from the NFL, veteran cornerback Adam Pac-Man Jones announced his retirement yesterday after a 12-year career. These Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by VA Healthcare. Get the healthcare you earned and deserve. Call 844-VA-CARES or go to vacares.us. I'm Mike O'Brien, your boss home for Sports 98.5 The Sports Hub. Next update at 10 o'clock.
Press the right pad, Sam. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Don't forget, coming up on Monday to kick off the Stanley Cup Final, the Bruins and the NHL will be hosting a free outdoor concert and viewing party at Boston City Hall Plaza. Presented locally by Connection, the event opens at 4:30 p.m. Monday with musical performances starting at 6 p.m. Fans can stick around to watch the Bruins and Blues game on the video screens. They'll have food trucks, beer, wine, and more. You can learn more at bostonbruins.com/Stanley Cup Final Party. Again, some of the perks of still playing hockey on Memorial Day, getting to have outdoor events, which are few and far between around here during the course of a normal hockey season. But a great take and a great opportunity for people to be a part of the atmosphere of the Stanley Cup Final. We've talked a lot about the layoff, obviously, and all of that, and that's a big storyline coming in here. But let's talk about the matchup between these two teams. Bob, you open up today in talking about the depth of these teams. And, you know, it's one thing that we talk about with the Bruins all the time, being able to roll four lines in all situations and being able to get quality minutes out of these guys night in and night out, and they can come at you in so many different ways. And it's a relentless, if you're on the other end, it's just relentless. It never stops. St. Louis Blues, I think Bruce Cassidy said, you know, it's kind of a mirror image of us, right? They do a lot of those same little things that we do. And so, you know, the Bruins haven't come up against a team quite like that in this postseason.
No, in fact, you know, you look at the last couple of series that they've played. Okay, Carolina essentially went with three lines and five defensemen. You know, they didn't trust their fourth line at all. And they had different guys in and out. Columbus, same way. Columbus didn't play their fourth line. Hardly. I mean, they played them a little bit, but you know, rarely. And they went, you know, they were top heavy with some of their defensemen, which most teams are, you know, in those situations. I think Toronto tried to play everybody, but, you know, when you look at St. Louis and you just kind of look up and down their lineup, and, you know, they've had some big goals scored by their so-called third line, the Bozak line, you know, with Thomas and Maroon. You know, but they don't play a ton. You know, you look at Maroon's ice time, you know, it's around 10, 11, 12 minutes, but he contributes in those 10, 11, 12 minutes. He's a physical guy. He can hold on to the puck. But I think that they try to, you know, keep those minutes to a certain number. The fourth line will play significant minutes. We'll call it the fourth line, but they play significant minutes. You know, Sundqvist has played very well for them. They move Steen down to the fourth line to really get that balance there. And he gives them, you know, a ton of experience on that fourth line. And Barbashev has been a nice, you know, kind of, whatever you call it, surprise, I guess, for them. Not surprise. I mean, he's found a role. Let's put it that way. So, you know, that line is the Corrali line, you know, and then you look at like the Ryan O'Reilly is their Bergeron. 200-foot player, you know, very good, up for the Selkie. He's had an outstanding regular season. I think he was a little slow out of the gate in the playoffs, but he's been much better lately. Tarasenko has turned it on. Schwartz has been really consistent throughout. Top to bottom. I mean, they've got, and then you look at their D, you look at their defense, and they, you know, they'll ride those top four pretty heavily. And you've got Parayko and Pietrangelo on the right side, Edmondson and Bomeister on the left. Those four will see a ton of ice time. Gunnarsson, well, I don't know what's going on with Vince Dunn. He got hit in the face with a puck, and he hasn't played since. So
just starting to get back on the ice.
So, and he's a good puck moving defenseman. But if Gunnarsson's got to play, he's an experienced guy. But you know, they don't play him a ton, so they'll use a lot of five defensemen there. Bortuzzo will play a lot there. So you know, it's a team that. They do mirror the Bruins in a lot of ways, and they can play some different ways in order to beat you. And I don't take too much out of the regular season, but they play them twice, and they're hard-fought games. You know, they're big physical teams. So this is, I mean, I think the matchup is great in terms of, you know, value and being just, it's just an entertaining series if you like that, you know, physical type of play. And I think it's going to turn into a lot of that.
So where's the separation? I think part of that
special
is
teams.
In special teams. The Bruins number one on the power play. The Blues penalty kill is at 78% here in the playoffs. The Blues power play has been just slightly under 20%, which even during the regular season, that is average around the National Hockey League.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, in the playoffs, and we'll use 2011 as an example, through the first three rounds, the Bruins couldn't buy a power play goal. And then all of a sudden against Vancouver, they turned it on. But their penalty killing was excellent and throughout. So, you know, with the 12-day layoff, and like we keep coming back to it, I think it is important. You know, are you able to continue that momentum into the finals with the power play that you've had? And I, you know, the Bruins, and they found different ways to score. It hasn't always been, okay, let's get in the zone, let's set up, and let's, you know, get these seam passes and the movement. It's been off the rush. Case in point, game four against Carolina, right off the rush, that give and go between Pastrnak and Marchand, and Marchand gave it back to him. There's been goals scored with line changes being made. You know, so you get a couple guys that are out, and you get a couple, you know, couple guys go off the ice halfway through a power play, and you get a couple new guys on, and all of a sudden you're scoring. You know, Krejci hopping on the ice and getting an assist on a goal. I mean, they've scored in different ways. It hasn't always been top unit out there, move the puck around, score. So I think that that's encouraging because they found different ways to get it done.
And you've got nine different players with power play goals. Think about that. Nine different players across the two units have tallied on the power play. I think the other thing that has gone under the radar here through the first three rounds is that the Bruins penalty kill has gotten some traction. They're at just over 86% in the playoffs, and it's been a strength for them.
Let's go to John. You're up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show on a Saturday morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to make an observation that, you know, I've been watching some of the St. Louis games, and it seems to me like even though they have some snipers, some real snipers, that they get a lot of what you'd call dirty goals, you know, like tip-ins and deflections and rebounds. And I was just wondering what you guys thought about that and how best the Bruins could defend against that.
I mean, that's often the case with teams that have success in the postseason, right? I mean, it's not going to be all pretty. It's not going to be highlight real goals and, you know, guys who are, you know, just sniping top corners. It's going to be a lot of the goals are scored within a few feet of the net, rebounds, tip-ins, doing the work in front, being willing to go to those dirty areas. And St. Louis is a team that has that kind of grit, that kind of mentality.
Greasy goals. I mean, who's Bruce Cassidy and their staff talk about it all the time. Who's going to win the slot battle? And, you know, I don't think Carolina was built for that. You know, St. Louis is. St. Louis is. And, you know, whether it was St. Louis or whether it was, you know, a team like San Jose with Joe Pavelski in front of the net, I mean, they have a willingness to get there. So that's going to be a really important part of it. You know, who's going to win that slot battle? Both ends of the ice. You know, can you get inside their big defensemen? Their defensemen are big. You know, they might not be, you know, guys who will really crush you. I mean, they'll hit. They got a couple guys that are physical, tough.
Edmondson,
Edmondson's
Bortuzzo,
very edgy. Bortuzzo plays that
Parenko
way. Yeah, so can you get inside of them? And then the Bruins haven't faced that yet. You know, they faced a player or two, but I don't think they've faced a group that's kind of as big as St. Louis's D. I think that Bruins will be willing to go there, but they have to be because they're going to have to score some of those greasy goals. And St. Louis knows the same thing. And so that's, I mean, it's always an important part of a series and or a game. And there's a lot of little, and when I talk about battles along the walls, battles in front of the net as well. So that's going to be a tough area to go to.
And really at the offensive end, but not just Carolina, I don't think Toronto was built to play out in front of the nets.
Yeah.
You know, that they maybe had one or two players that would challenge you in the slot battle down low. You did see that in the Columbus series.
Oh, yeah.
So this is going to be very reminiscent of that, but you have some more dangerous players here.
Yeah, you know, Columbus was willing to do a lot of that. Columbus was physical. They were willing to do all those things. I just don't think they were deep enough. And, you know, the Bruins were able to solve them as the series went on.
617-779-0985. We can continue to take your phone calls as we continue on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning, getting you ready for Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final on Monday night. Taking your calls at 617-779-0985. Let's go to Mike in Chelmsford up next. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
All right. You know, this long layoff, I think it might hurt the offense a little bit, you know, trying to get their skates under them. But as far as Tuukka goes, I think he's going to be fine. You know, if you look back during the course of the season when they took him out for a little while, whatever personal problems he had, he came back and he was fine. It seems like he, you know, he just picked up. I mean, he did really well.
I mean, again, I think for me, it's my concern is that over the course of his time here, and Judd, you kind of alluded to, goalies are a different breed. I mean, they're kind of a weird bunch, and you almost have to be if you're going to make your living by putting yourself in front of
well,
pucks that are coming
years.
At you at 100 miles an hour. It's not a career choice for most people.
But just look over the years, how many different organizations have added a full-time goaltending coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be maybe we'd have a guy who would deal with all the prospects in our system, but not a guy that focused on the goaltenders on a night-in, night-out basis. But that is now a constant around the National Hockey League. You absolutely have to have that. As far as the timing issue, because I was doing some stuff with the St. Louis radio, you know, here in the last couple of days. I'm sure Beersey's done a ton as well. And so what do the Bruins need to focus on, especially in Game 1 and throughout that series? How do you break down the Blues' forecheck? Because that was one of the things. They pulverized San Jose across that series. And the deeper it got, the more that they were able to lock down and take hold. For the Bruins, the less time they spent in their own zone to make it, whether they exit using their feet or using some tape-to-tape passes, they have to be able to limit the zone time and how much punishment and how much zone time St. Louis is going to get an opportunity to get.
Well, it's important on both sides. I mean, yeah. You know, Bruins is able to establish their forecheck and get in there. I hope the caller's right, by the way, that Tuukka will be okay. I mean, I think he will as well. I mean, you know, there's some recent history. We already talked about it a bit, you know, when he got hurt there and then they had the long layoff because of the bye week. You know, he had some time off, significant time off. Now, when he came back, they were alternating, but still, you know, he was able to pick up. And, you know, there was some time towards the end of the season where his play dipped a little bit. I think both goaltenders actually dipped a little bit where, you know, you had other goaltenders stealing games. And I think that there was some concern that, you know, the goaltending needed to be picked up a little bit. They weren't bad. They weren't bad by any means, mm-hmm. but they were just off a little bit on some certain occasions. And now it's just been the playoffs have been outstanding. It's just it's been great to watch. It's been fun to watch. They've needed him in certain games, you know, where, you know, can a goaltender steal you a game? And I think you cannot act, you know, and Tuukka Rask, some of the critics out there for Rask was he'll be good and his numbers will be good, but can he steal you a game? Well, I think he can.
He's done it in this run.
Game three against Carolina, first period, it was an onslaught.
Yep.
And he was for Carolina to come out of that period scoreless. I mean, that was a kick right there. So, yeah, he stole that game. I mean, second, third period were fine, but he stole that first period, which gave them the ability to win. So, you know, he's done that throughout this playoff when they've needed him to stand up and be really good. He's been outstanding.
Let's take that point one step further, because Bob, you and I were having this conversation just before we started that sometimes we get lost in the numbers as far as goaltenders.
Yeah. I mean, Carolina throws pucks on net from everywhere. So save percentage. Okay. Like, I get it. It's a nice stat to look at, and it's relatively important, but you got a guy that dumps a puck in from the red line because they need a line change and it goes on net. That's a save.
Right.
So, you know,
you need save percentage based on their real scoring chances, right?
Games.
Yeah.
Come up with, you know, make those. And he did, you know, against Carolina again, and take any game, really, the games that he's played, you know, there have been quality chances against him. It's the quality of the chances. And you look at those numbers more so than just the actual save percentage itself. And they have those analytics. They focus on that all the time. But those are the ones that you really look at. And I'm sure that those numbers are off the charts this playoff.
Here's a perfect example, by the way, Roberto Luongo. So I'm just looking at his numbers. 06-07, he had a .941 save percentage for Vancouver. They didn't make it out of the second round.
Mm-hmm. I go back to say the series against Columbus where Bobrovsky's playing out of his mind for a good chunk of that series. And Tuukka Rask down at the other end is, you know, wasn't making as spectacular stand on his head type saves, but he was put into a position where like one little mistake potentially cost you those games, right? That's kind of what I feel like this series turns into, is that these teams are evenly matched. They play a similar style. You don't expect that these are going to be, you know, terribly high scoring games the way that these teams match up against each other. And so, you know, that one soft goal could wind up costing you games in this series. And that's where you need him to be mentally sharp right off the drop.
It wouldn't surprise me if game one is a little bit more high scoring because of the long layoff that both of these teams are going to deal with. and because of the amped up energy that you're going to see in game one.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if it's, you know, 2-2 after the first period in, of game one, because, like you said, both of them, with the layoff, with the way that the crowd's going to be, like, it's going to be, you know, it's not going to take long to find the energy in this series.
And I do think it's going to settle into the series that I think we all expect.
You know, just kind of looking at Tuukka in the regular season, because that was that time off, right? He played on the 19th against the New York Rangers, and that's the game he got hurt in. Mm-hmm. And then they had the bye week following that, and he came back and played on the 31st, so 12 days, right? Came back and played. It was a 3-2 loss to the Philadelphia Flyers. It was in overtime. Following that game, he went on a long streak without losing. A pretty good streak there without losing in regulation. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 0-1 in the next 11 for him.
I'd take that. That'd be pretty good. All right, let's get Sports Hub headlines here. We got another hour still to come. 617-779-0985 is the number. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers coming to you from the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. Getting ready for game one of the Stanley Cup Final. Bruins and Blues. Of course, the only place to hear the local call is right here with these two guys throughout the course of the final. We've been talking about this matchup and what we expect out of this series. Nick chimed in on Twitter with a question about Vladimir Tarasenko, who we haven't really talked too much about so far this morning. He said, how do the Bruins limit Tarasenko's opportunities? We've seen him snipe in the past and present from all different angles. And how should the Bruins D-core handle him? This is a guy who, if you look at his numbers over the course of the postseason, has gotten better as they have gone on. I think he had only 2 points in their first round series, 3 points in the second round series. He had 8 points in that series against San Jose. So you're catching him at his hottest right now coming into the series. How do the Bruins defend him?
Well, a little heart-to-heart with Craig Berube, I think, helped a little bit get him going. Well, it's just like anybody, Ryan, really. I mean, any skilled guy, you take away time and space. They talk about that a lot. Take away time and space. So if he's coming through the neutral zone, you've got to have the back pressure from the forwards. You'll be able to seal him off. It allows the defenseman to be more aggressive and step up. If they have the numbers coming up the ice, then the defensemen maybe aren't as aggressive in those situations. But if you allow him time and space to get his shot away or to make plays, in fact, he had a couple of great passes in that series against San Jose. He's going to hurt you, and he's going to be a threat. They face this. It's not like they haven't faced this. I mean, you face Austin Matthews in the first round, big kind of guy that can snipe, can really shoot it. They were able to take him away a lot. He's going to get some opportunities. You have to kind of live with that, and that's when you need Tuukka Rask to be really good. But, you know, he scores some goals. He likes to go top shelf with that shot. A lot of them come from the left wing side, which is his strong side. He's a left shot. Even on the power play from that circle, he can score off the rush. He did that against San Jose, but they were high glove. One was short side, another one was high glove. So, I mean, that's the way he likes to score his goals. But you give him time and space. I mean, the obvious thing, be physical, take away time and space. But there'll be some other things, I'm sure. And the Bruins like the way that they have – they like to talk about their layers. You know, if one guy gets beat, there's another guy right in your face. They don't play a man-to-man D. They will make sure that they're as physical as possible on him. I don't think I'm not sure if he minds that. You know, you say nobody, you know, he doesn't like to get hit. That's, you know, the old saying, you're in the locker room, hit him, he doesn't like to be hit. Well, nobody likes to get hit, but some guys are able to, you know, play through it, and some guys aren't. And it'll be interesting to see how Tarasenko handles it throughout the series. But the real danger, I mean, he's a dangerous guy, no question. There are other dangerous players on that team. Jordan Schwartz is one of them. He's had an outstanding playoff with the goals that he scored, and he's been remarkably consistent throughout the playoffs as well.
You got to remember, Vladimir Tarasenko is a strong player, 6 feet, 225 pounds. I think in past playoffs, there has been an issue under previous coaching staffs wondering about his conditioning level and his ability to stay out there to play more than a 30-second shift or to be able to spot him. I don't know that that's necessarily an issue at this point. I think earlier in the playoffs, when all we saw, when we were watching the Western Conference, well, what's going on with Vladimir Tarasenko? How can the Blues get him going? I think it's also about touches, and he gets a lot of his opportunities through the power play, and that's where a lot of his confidence flows.
I was just going to bring that up because 7 of his 13 points in this postseason, including 5 of his 8 goals, have come on the power play. 5-on-5, you know, 6 points in, what did they play, 19 games, I think, in the postseason. You would expect more out of that.
Series. Yeah, I mean, I do, and I know that the Blues do. But series to series, different heroes, different people step up. How do you handle the moment? How do you handle the situation? You know, it's that's why I think that the depth of both teams, the ability to have goals come in from so many different people is important, because when that top guy isn't going, or when you're, you know, the most gifted scorer on your team isn't going, you need other people to contribute, and that's what they've gotten.
Well, in his line, Jaden Schwartz has been a guy who's had a huge postseason.
And they have Shen there too. Yeah. Shen doesn't have the points. He's had some chances. He doesn't have the points, but he opens up a lot of space for them. He's a very physical player. He finishes every hit. And the type of game that he plays, now that allowed O'Reilly to move to a different line and kind of spread it out a bit. That's the way that they've kind of gone about it. They've spread out their scoring. They've spread out their talent throughout the top four lines. And, you know, when you've got, like I said, when you got Steen playing on a so-called fourth line, you know, you've really spread it out on your team, and you've got that balanced attack. And, you know, I think with Shen there, you know, he's not as gifted an offensive player as Ryan O'Reilly is, but he adds a different element to that line, and it opens up some space for them.
I also think it'll be different for the Blues facing a team like the Bruins, because the Sharks are not a very structured group. And when the Blues did face a structured group in the Dallas Stars, they had a hard time. Part of that was Ben Bishop, but it was also the way that the Stars defended, and it took until double overtime in Game 7 for the Blues to prevail.
Who do you guys think, as you're talking about Shen, and he's, I think, one of these guys that I think that
wasn't for, he rumored to come to the
for
Bruins
me
at one point.
but I was going to ask you guys, who are we going to hate by the end of this series on the St. Louis Blues?
Because
there'll
be a few guys.
I think Shen is one of those guys because of the way that he plays that people are gonna point at. But you mentioned earlier, there's some guys on this team that have some grit and are play kind of on that edge.
They do, you know, Ryan, but they do it the right way. You know what I mean? Like Judd was saying earlier about the penalties, they don't take a lot of penalties, and neither do the Bruins. They do it the right way. It's just physical, hard hockey, and it's between the whistles most of the time. There's a few things that go on after the whistle, but, you know, it's hockey played the right way. That's the way I look at it, and I think the Blues and the Bruins, you know, personify it right now.
I'll give you a couple contestants. I don't think anybody's on the level of Brad Marchand, and that question has been asked of me a couple of times this week. Robert Bortuzzo, Joel Edmondson, Sammy Blais, David Perron. Those will probably be among the group of players.
Yeah, Perron more so because he's going to get a chance to see. He's a chirper, you know, and he'll stick you and stuff like that. But he's not an overly physical player. He's more of an offensive player.
But more of a guy who's going to he's trying to
of Marchand.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that to me is, you know, is a part of the game too, and it's part of what when Marchand is under control of himself, you know, he's as good at it as anybody, and I think does help the team in that regard by getting in guys. I mean, we saw what happened with Justin Williams during the Carolina series. You get a guy out of his game like that, yeah.
And Krug, because the game in Carolina was all Krug.
Well, yeah, Justin Williams chasing him all over the arena, trying to, you know, drive him through the glass and taking penalties left and right for it. Like
that cuckoo switch.
Yeah, just totally lost his mind in the middle of that game. Your team's captain.
First period when they had all the momentum.
Yeah. 617-779-0985, of course, is the number. We're talking a lot about the Blues today, obviously, because we're getting to know them and ready for game one. But we also, you know, we've seen a hell of a run here by this Bruins team throughout the course of this postseason. So I want to get into a little bit of what they have done, what we've seen from them, and what the expectations are for some of these players coming up in the Stanley Cup Final. So we'll do that coming up next. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.5 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here on a Saturday morning. Game one of the Stanley Cup Final is finally upon us, just a couple more days before we get this thing going. And through all of the wait, through all of the discussion about what this series is going to be, we haven't talked that much about what we've seen out of this Bruins team up to this point. So I want to talk a little bit about that with you guys. That when you went back to the start of this postseason, clearly we knew, you know, or we thought we knew what the road was going to look like for this team, and it was going to go through Tampa Bay, and then that turned out not to happen. So everything kind of has been thrown into a little bit of chaos once they went down in the first round the way they did. But you knew that this team was capable of advancing and getting deep into the playoffs. But from an individual standpoint, who has really jumped out at you that maybe you didn't expect to have played as big a role or been quite as good as they have been to this point?
Well, I don't know if it's that I didn't expect it, because I kind of did expect it, and we talked before the playoffs started, wanted Sean Corrali to get back in the lineup mm-hmm. to see what he was how he would do. It was interesting to read an article recently that talked to the coaches or some of the players that the Bruins have played already. Mike Babcock was quoted as saying he felt the series turned when Sean Corrali got in the lineup, and it started to turn when he got in there and got healthy. So you know, he's had some big game goals. He's had some big games before. I don't want to single out any one player, but, you know, I think that he has stood out. I think the play of the third line has stood out. You know, Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson have formed pretty good chemistry there, along with Danton Heinen, and they've played well. They've played well. And you look, and I know that sometimes the plus-minus stats can be a little overrated, you know, but you look at the stats for the league right now, plus-minus-wise. Zdeno Chara is number one in the league at plus 11. Danton Heinen's number two at 10. McAvoy's 9. Coyle's 9. And then Bergeron at 8. So, you know, Coyle and Heinen have played a lot together. And I think it just they haven't been scored on a lot. They've had the puck a lot, and it's been a very effective line for them. So when Don Sweeney went out and made trades, you know, to get to add depth to the team, you know, we were saying, okay, what are the holes? Second line right wing. David Backes has stepped in and done a nice job there over the last handful of games. And third line center. Well, he added a third line center and he added a third line winger in Johansson. And it's really kind of smoothed out the depth for the Bruins. And it's added a lot. It's added an element that the other teams haven't been able to handle. Now, I do think that St. Louis is more equipped for it or better equipped for it. I don't think the other teams that the Bruins have played in the playoffs, specifically Columbus and Carolina, had the depth to keep up with Boston.
Those are the first players that I wanted to probably, you know, reference when you talk about guys that have given you a ton.
But there's so many guys you can go to. I mean, sure, I know you're looking at one right now.
Connor Clifton?
Yeah.
What did you expect from a kid who was coming out of Quinnipiac, who was the 12th defenseman you used during the course of the season? I'm just looking at the ice times, and that will usually tell you how much trust a coaching staff has in a certain player. He played in the closeout game against Carolina, 17 and a half minutes. In game two, he played 19 and a half minutes. 19 and a half. Think about that. He played 18 in game one when Charlie McAvoy was suspended. Those are some big-time minutes when you're wondering, okay, how are the Bruins going to pull this off without Charlie McAvoy? How are they going to pull this off even in Game 4 without Zdeno Chara? This guy has logged some really meaningful minutes for you.
I mean, there was a period in the, you know, in the Columbus series where he was getting 8 minutes, 10 minutes. You know, he was getting a 13 shifts a game. And then you're right. You get into that Carolina series, and now he's logging 24, 25, 26 shifts a game, and he's, you know, closing in on 20 minutes in some of those games. And it's like, just from one series to the next, the level increased. And I think I made the point at that time after game one of that series, as you just mentioned, Judd, when McAvoy was out, I think that was the game where you could really see, like, you know, maybe he got forced into having to give him some extra minutes. But from that point, there was no reason for Bruce Cassidy not to have the total confidence in Clifton's game that he could withstand the extra time on the ice without causing any issues.
So he's playing alongside Matt Grizzlick as the third pair. Yeah. And, you know, Grizzlick, very good puck mover, took some pretty good hits in that series against Carolina on a couple of occasions. But Clifton's been a good physical presence for them. He's been a guy that can really move the puck. He can skate when he gets those feet moving. You know, he's engaged physically. And what has the second pair given you through this playoff? We're talking about guys who maybe surprise you. And Carlos surprises me a little bit because we had nothing to base it on. You know, he'd never played a playoff game coming into this. He's had a very, very strong playoff. And he's a guy that can skate. He can play physical, although it's not necessarily first kind of come in his nature. But he can play physically, but he defends with his feet and his long reach. And he can move the puck up the ice with that speed. So, you know, he's made good decisions. He's taken hits to make plays. He's worked very well with Torrey Krug, who's had a really good playoff as well. I mean, so Krug, we had a little sample size of, though. Carlo, we had no sample size. So I've been really impressed with the way that he's played.
But Torrey Krug defensively, I mean,
he's battled like crazy.
You know what? Because that's the knock on him. And it has been throughout his time here is that, look, you know what he can give you offensively, but defensively, it can be a struggle at times. And that hasn't been the case in this postseason.
The D is a group. As a six-man unit, or seven or eight if you want to add Kampfer and John Moore in there. But as a group, have really battled in the defensive zone to allow Rask to see pucks and only see one shot. You know, make sure that those rebounds are clear. There's times, of course, where there's going to be rebound chances. There's going to be some opportunities around the net. But for the most part, by and large, they've done a really good job of keeping people from the front. And then the other part of that is, how do they get back for pucks? How do they break pucks out? You know, they've tried to incorporate that hold up for your partner without putting a stick on a guy, just kind of getting in his way, making him take a longer route to try to get to where the puck is and making sure that they're in sync coming out of the zone. So that's been a big part of their breakouts and the ability to get back for pucks and not be hemmed in their zone. It will happen from time to time. It's going to happen. You're going against a good team that likes to establish a forecheck. You know, it will happen where you get stuck in your zone. How do you defend once you're stuck in there? You know, these are all things that the Bruins have to be able to manage here moving forward and have to ramp back up after the 12 days off.
Well, and, you know, as we said, they really haven't had for a while to face a team that's quite as deep as this, that can threaten you on every shift. And so, you know, the importance of being able to roll those three pairs out there consistently and, you know, try and keep guys as fresh as they can is going to be terribly important in this series. Let's talk about David Backes for a moment. Playing his old team. You know, lots going to be made about that. A lot already has been made about that. We've talked about him and the kind of transformation in his game throughout the course of this season after the sit down with Bruce Cassidy and what he has brought to the table in this postseason. And now he's got, you know, after a long successful career, he gets a crack at a Stanley Cup.
I think this is just a perfect series for him in the way that it's set up. Not only are you playing against your old team, so the adrenaline's flowing there. You play every other day the first two games, 2 days off. Every other day, the games 3 and 4, 2 days off. And 2 days off between each game after that. I think that gives him, I really think that rest in between games, and I don't know, maybe I'm totally off on this, but I do believe it has a big impact on what he's able to give. But I think the adrenaline is going to be flowing unbelievable for him. And it's not a fast. If you say, okay, describe the St. Louis Blues, fast is not the first thing that comes to your mind.
Right. It's not like playing Toronto was earlier in the playoffs. Yeah.
And, you know, they'll have guys with speed, but they're heavy. So is this a good series for David Backes? I think it sets up perfectly for him.
I hope
it does.
Yeah, well, the scheduling part of it, you know, I think we talked about it earlier on in the playoffs. When they were, you know, when Backes wasn't playing every game, they were kind of, you know, slotting him in to get or giving him a game off so that he would be fresh when he came back. So now the schedule's kind of working that for them. They won't necessarily have to give him a game off because there's a couple of days off in between
and they regulate
2 and 3 and 4
well.
And 5. And as we have mentioned that too, that, you know, give him 10 minutes, 11 minutes a night and, you know, and get the most out of him when he's out there as opposed to trying to really stretch him. And that's another thing that they've been able to work because they got a little deeper at that position, you know, as you were talking about earlier with Johansson. And they can, you know, they have some guys who can play different roles or move around during the course of a game that can help to fill that
sometimes,
spot.
Sometimes, you know, they'll put Charlie Coyle on that right wing once in a while for a defensive zone faceoff, and he doesn't come off after the faceoff. He stays out there on that line with David Krejci. You know, so they'll regulate some of the minutes as the game goes on, depending on how the game has gone and how, you know, David Backes is playing. But he's had a big impact in the games that he's been in there recently.
As far as matchups go, how do they deploy the Bergeron line, thinking about what they do defensively? Are they going to be matched up against Tarasenko a lot, or are they going to be looking to match up differently?
I don't know if it's the forwards I'm going to be most interested in seeing. I think it's going to be the D pairs. How do you deploy Brandon Carlo? So in the first three rounds, Carlo has been positioned against the other team's top offensive weapon, ultimately in the series. Auston Matthews in round one, Artemi Panarin in round two, Sebastian Aho in round three. So does that put him up against Jaden Schwartz? That's, I think, what's going to be the most interesting thing. Because remember, with the Bergeron line, you have multiple lines that can check. You can check them with the Corrali line. You can check with the Bergeron line. So I think it's going to be, for me, watching who gets deployed, who the D-pairs get against St. Louis.
I mean, for, you know, that's so much about what this, you know, what these series sometimes morph into is, you know, who's got last change and, you know, and what kind of matchups they're looking for. That's one thing that I think gets underplayed a little bit about the layoff is, and granted, the Bruins didn't know for a few days after they won their series who they were going to be up against, but they had a long time to scout and to figure out, like, you know, tendencies, figure out what they want to do and turns it into a little bit more of a chess match early on in this series because they've had nothing to do for a week and a half but figure out exactly what types of matchups they want in these first two games.
Yeah, and then we'll see what Craig Berube wants to do as well. Of course, he's not going to have the last change in the first couple of rounds, first couple of games. I would imagine games 3 and 4, Ryan O'Reilly will go against the Bergeron line, but, you know, will Bruce Cassidy try to stay away from that matchup in the first two games? I mean, that's all the chess match of the coaches and you know, how teams want to deploy guys. I mean, who's Chara and McAvoy going to go up against? You know, if you put Carlo and Krug up against the Tarasenko line, then, you know, who does McAvoy and Chara come back against? I think their fourth line is going to play a pivotal role. You know, who they're going to try to check, I mean Berube might even go with that line against the Bergeron line, try to be physical with them every shift. So I mean, there could be a lot of different looks, I think, through this series, and a lot of matchups, and with 12 days off, we have time to kind of look at it and wonder and wait.
And overanalyze every little thing, right? That's the fun part. All right, let's get Sports Hub headlines, and then Billy Jaffe is going to join us in studio coming up next here on The Hockey Show.
Sports Hub headlines.
The Red Sox opened up their series against the Houston Astros last night. Sloppy defense and an early deficit all resulted in a 4-3 loss. Starter Chris Sale went 6 innings, allowing 3 hits, 4 runs, only 2 of those earned as the Sox committed 3 errors. Sale also struck out 5 and walked 2. Boston was able to close the gap late in the game on solo homers by Christian Vasquez, Xander Bogaerts, and Jackie Bradley Jr. First pitch for Game 2 of this 3-game set is 7:25 p.m. tonight. The pitching matchup sees David Price go up against Brad Peacock. Coming off points in back-to-back games, the Revolution will try and make it a 3-game streak as they host DC United this evening at 7:30. You can listen to the game right here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. Boston Bruins practicing today at the Garden in advance of Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final against the St. Louis Blues. Media day tomorrow for both teams, and finally back to action Monday night as the Bruins go for their second Stanley Cup of the decade. Game 6 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Final between Toronto and Milwaukee tips off tonight in Toronto at 8:25. Raptors have a 3-2 series lead and be looking to close things out and earn their first ever trip to the NBA Final in a matchup against Golden State. Note from the NFL, veteran quarterback Adam Pac-Man Jones announced his retirement yesterday after a 12-year career and deserve. Call 844-VA-CARES or go to vacares.us. I'm Mike O'Brien, and your boss home for Sports 985 The Sports Hub. Tip McCone has your next update at 11 a.m.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Don't forget to kick off the Stanley Cup Final. The Bruins and the NHL will be hosting a free outdoor concert and viewing party at Boston City Hall Plaza on Monday night, presented locally by Connection. The event will open at 4:30 p.m. with musical performances starting at 6 p.m. Monday. Fans can stick around and watch the Bruins Blues game on video screens, food trucks, beer, wine, and more. Learn more at bostonbruins.com/Stanley Cup Final Party. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here with you, previewing game one of the Stanley Cup Final. And now we welcome in Nesson's Billy Jaffe joining us in studio this week. What's up?
It's ready to go. That's it. How you guys doing?
ready to see some hockey for the first time in what feels like forever?
It feels like forever. I know, after seeing a game just about now, literally almost every night, now it's like, okay. I almost forget.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's one thing to not have a Bruins game every other night. It's another thing to just not have any games.
I know.
Like, the whole thing has taken some time off here, and that's taken my TV viewing has been disrupted.
I've actually gone to bed before, I don't know, 1 in the morning, used to those West Coast games. I'm starting to get to sleep a little earlier, but yeah, I can't wait. Obviously, like everybody else, excited and wait. I mean, the anticipation, maybe it's adding to the to it, you know. I mean, maybe there's something to that too.
Well, as we were talking about earlier, there's no question both of these teams will be geared up and ready to go.
The Blues are rocking. I mean, the St. Louis is rocking. Talked to some buddies that live there, and a few of them actually are flying in, spending the money to come to games here in Boston. They're so excited because they're all basically give or take our same ages, and they're like, you know, we haven't seen this, you know, obviously since 49 years.
Ticket prices out in St. Louis are more than they're going for in Boston.
I've been here. Although, yeah, I had a buddy that paid over $1,000 a ticket.
Wow.
Here. Now that's lower seats for game one, but I hear in St. Louis, because again, 49 years, they have some prices that are going through the roof there. And it'll go even crazier on the secondary market if, let's say, St. Louis comes in and splits. You know, I mean, game three or game four, they'll even get higher. So it's good. I mean, they're doing some remodeling that building. I haven't been there in a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. So I don't know if it looks any different to you guys this year or not, but people say it does. You know, they say they like it more. And the city's going nuts right now. So this is awesome. I mean, this is a great makeup of a series.
What happened with this Blues team that was in dead last back in January, and you know, Craig Berube has taken over and things have gone into the right direction. So how did they get to this point?
Well, a couple of things. They made the choice to, you know, Doug Armstrong's the general manager. He made a lot of moves in the offseason. The big one being the trade for Ryan O'Reilly from the Buffalo Sabres. He comes in after having a year that was disheveled in Buffalo. Let's put it that way. He talked about not even enjoying hockey anymore, being very honest about it. He said when he was there, comes in, and now there becomes, and I talked to Craig Berube about this for a while. He said early on in the season, players, especially players that had been here previously, so veterans of St. Louis, not new guys, but didn't know their roles. They didn't know where they fit in. They felt like that there wasn't a clear path, which is interesting to hear, but he said we needed to get that sorted out. We needed to tell guys that, A, they belonged, and where they belong, too. Then you get a guy. So
it didn't happen overnight, though.
Oh, God, no. No, that's what I'm saying.
When Craig Berube came in, it still took some time.
Was his first thing that he did. He addressed that. Craig Berube said, this is your role. You fit in here, and this is where it is. Then they get a guy by the name of Jordan Binnington, as you point out. He's part of the process. I think the way that, not I think, I know the way I described it is, so Berube was kind of like that massive cruise ship that came in that can't turn like a speedboat, you know, real quick, but he started the process of the turn. He started that. Then you add a guy like Binnington to the mix, and that makes the turn a little sharp, you know. He starts winning early on, and it gives them confidence because let's face it, Jake Allen, they wanted to make this, they were praying that he would become a starter eventually. I'm not talking a starter, a winning starter. And how was it the last 2 years, 3 years? It has been mediocre, I think, is being nice. It was bad. You get Binnington, you win, Berube, the attitude, and all of a sudden it's accountability and you're getting results. And that's what ended up happening.
Well, you also had a lot of flux. So you go from Ken Hitchcock to Mike Yeo, now to Craig Berube. You lost your captain a couple of years ago, David Backes, who was the guy who was able to control the message that came from Ken Hitchcock. And trust me, sometimes that's a very loud, overbearing message from Hitchcock, and he's a fabulous coach with a great pedigree. But I think it also took some time for Alex Pietrangelo to find his legs as the captain of that team.
Well, yeah, and let's not also look past this. And I wonder if Doug Armstrong would admit it or not. But when he made that choice, remember that, was it curious to you, Judd? Was it curious to you, Bob, when a few years ago, when Ken Hitchcock was named the coach, and then he hired Mike Yeo to be the coach in waiting?
Bad decision.
So I think that had something to do with it as well, because, you know, that set it up 2 years ago. And I think a lot of the players looked at it and they said, wait a second, this is odd. And maybe they didn't vocalize it, but it just didn't feel right and it didn't look right. So you put all that together, you get some crappy play, and that's what happened for a while.
You had a lot of passengers earlier this year, too. I mean, you go back to the beginning of the season, Jay Bouwmeester was a healthy scratch. First time in his career, he was a healthy scratch at different times earlier in the season. There were all kinds of trade rumors. You know, Pietrangelo was going to get traded, Tarasenko was going to get traded, Shen was going to get traded. Everybody that could, you know, muster a rumor up was talking about these guys. And for them, so the adversity that they've been through and the up and downs that they've been through, I mean, you know, it's something that we talk a lot about here or on just in games. The teams that face the most adversity and come through on the other end are the most dangerous teams. And this team has that. This team has that based on what they've been through. And then all the other seasons where they've had disappointments, they've run into some great teams in the Western Conference that have beaten them and gone on to win the Cup. And now they've got their opportunity, and they've been through, the core group for this group, this team has been through a ton of adversity.
And I think a guy that really personifies getting, I don't want to talk about adversity in the sense of, I mean, he just didn't play well, and now is playing beautifully, is Jaden Schwartz. And I've always been a fan of his because his
11 goals in the regular season.
Right. He has more goals now in the playoffs
than he
did. Right. His motor is always running. And again, I'm talking to Craig Berube about him, I think, what was it, Jan or Feb when they were in town? I don't remember when the Blues were here. He just said, he said, look, I'm not going to say that he has been unlucky. There's been some posts. There's been a lot of it. He's working hard. He's doing the right things. I believe in him. I legitimately believe in him. And you know what? It was a bad regular season. But what a playoff. I love this. I've always liked this guy because this kid's motor doesn't stop.
He reminds me a lot of Zach Parise. Maybe slightly smaller than Parise, but just more relentless.
Yeah, but maybe even a little more skilled than
Parise. No, St. Louis.
I don't know. If you look at the numbers that Parise's put up as a 30-goal scorer, I mean, this year, the regular season for Jaden Schwartz was an outlier.
Yeah,
I think
bad.
He's had four different 30-goal seasons.
He might have been one of those guys that didn't know where he fit. You know, maybe that's what, who knows? But he didn't, you're right, he didn't play well.
And then the best thing that Doug Armstrong did was not blowing it up. That was all the rumors. They're going to blow it up. He believed in the team. He believed that they were trending in the right direction, just weren't getting the results after.
I think
Berube
he saw
in.
That Mike Yeo wasn't the right guy, too. I mean,
that was early in the year when that trigger was pulled. So
right. And I think that, like you said, that was the beginning of it.
And Berube has given them an approach. I mean, he's no nonsense, you know, matter of fact. It's the way he played.
And calm. And nothing seems to... Look, he would go into buildings and having to fight three times in the old days against the toughest, baddest mothers in the league, and he was right up there with them. Does he still lead the NHL in all-time fighting majors?
And this is his second go-around as the head coach as well.
Yeah, so, like Butch. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. He's great.
You learn a little bit.
And you know, just like the Bruins staff with Sacco and Dean, et cetera, Pando, they love their staff there with Steve Ott and Mike Van Ryn. These are guys that can really still relate to the players because Van Ryn and Ott were playing just a couple of years
ago. Remember there was a fight earlier in the season in a practice for St. Louis.
Yeah, Bertuzzo.
No, that's not, it was Bertuzzo, and I can't remember who he went after. But
young kid. I think it was Sanford.
So the funniest thing was that Steve Ott was the guy that was playing Peacemaker.
Maturity.
He would have to break it up. No, but that kind of, and fights in practice aren't, out of the, they will happen from time to time, but I think it illustrated the frustration that was boiling over in St. Louis at the time.
I agree. No, I absolutely agree. I'm pretty sure it was Sanford, the young kid that got under the skin of Bertuzzo. And I think Bertuzzo, who reminds me, for lack of a better comparison, of an Adam McQuaid. That type of big right-handed shot defenseman, character guy, tough. He'll fight in the sense of you're not expecting goals out of him. He had a nice one in the playoffs against San Jose that early on in the series. He was outstanding. But that type of guy. So I think he got pissed off in practice in that moment and said, I've had enough. And I think it did help the team too. I do. This is a good team. I heard you guys coming in that the depth of this team is something, as you said, that the Bruins haven't seen yet. That's going to be a huge factor.
If you're Bruce Cassidy, what's keeping you up at night right now?
I guess maybe the depth and the defense if the Bruins don't get St. Louis's D-men to turn and to chase and to have to decipher assignments, et cetera, I think the Bruins will have a hard time. If they play him face-to-face, I mean, Beers, you're a defenseman. If you're facing me, if my speed isn't in factor, you love that. Your stick is there. Your gap is controlled. Colton Parayko controls gaps with his 6 foot, what, 5'6", 6'6", and his reach and his depth and everything. If you don't get them to turn, I think they're going to turn the puck back up the ice all night against the Bees.
And their forwards will do the same thing to the Bruins D. That they'll be chipping and chasing and they'll be finishing. And
they don't look to carry on. So I think is that keep me up? Sure. I mean, the whole layoff thing, we'll see. We can speculate. Who the hell knows?
Well, I think, look, the layoff is a story during the layoff. And once you get through game one,
right,
that story is gone at that point, right? You're just into the series.
I mean, you
would hope that any rust gets worked out over the course of the first few periods and you move on with the rest of the series, especially because both teams are going through some level of that, right? I mean, even St. Louis is taking close to a week off.
Players, the vibe you get from them, being around them, they don't think it's a big deal. Granted, I don't think you can feel it until you experience it. So it's like they're saying all the right things and doing all the right things right now. But Monday at 8:20, what is it, 8:22, whatever it is when the puck goes down, that's when you know it. I mean, that's when you end up seeing it.
Well, there's a flip side. The flip side of that, too, is that, look, you don't go through a playoff run without guys getting banged up. And there were some guys on this team that are, dealing with all manner of bumps and bruises. Taking a week and a half off of a game, from games, that helps you heal up a little bit.
It does. But, it does. It's great. It's nice, especially a guy like Chara, and I'm sure there's a few other guys that needed it. But on the other hand, these guys like to run. You know what I mean?
It's too long.
They like to skate, yeah. I know you're trying to find the positives. I appreciate that. It's too long. I think 6 days for the Bruins would have been perfect. 2 days off, or one day a full off, one day on, another day off, then 2 days, and boom, you're into it. But it just didn't happen that way. So it is one of the worst things I hate to say. It is what it is. That's what it is, though, right?
Thank you, Bill.
You got it.
All right. So what kind of series do you see this turning into here? We've talked about, the fact that these two teams look to be mirror images of each other. Does that mean six, seven game series?
Yeah, yeah. I had it in six. One of the things that I would like to talk about is just the
Bruins win the cup on the road again.
Yeah, that's really what I have it at. That's my feeling. That's what I have. I think they split the first two games in Boston, and then I think they go into St. Louis and probably split there too. And then the Bees get rolling. That's just my cloudy crystal ball.
Both of these teams have been great on the road. I hate it, of course.
Yeah.
Both of these teams have been great on the road.
Yeah.
The Blues have the best road record here in the playoffs. The Bruins have been terrific on the road. And obviously, the leadership core has a pedigree of winning a Stanley Cup on the road.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to touch on this in the sense of this is not lamenting. This is questioning. So five officials, referees, have been assigned to the series.
Oh, you're going there.
The fifth one.
It has been rather a big story in this postseason.
The fifth one being Wes McCauley. Wes McCauley's going to
injured.
He's going to try and see if he can get through it. So if he can do it, then, you know, he's earned it as one of the top refs in the league to be there. It was a hamstring injury.
He's the best ref in the league.
Yeah. And you get him. And so right now, it was one guy that I was surprised it wasn't assigned to it. But I can tell you that, you know, Wes McCauley, Chris Rooney have been assigned. Steve Cazzari was the fifth official that got assigned as well. I thought Francis Charron might get it. Kelly Sutherland got it and Gordy Dwyer. But Charron didn't. Cazzari did. So now the reason I'm bringing this up is this.
Where are you going?
How does it get called? Meaning, if it you ask what kind of series is this. If it becomes more special teams, I think it favors the Bruins.
Absolutely.
Don't you guys agree?
But neither team has taken a lot of penalties up to this point. I think both teams I agree, but I think that both teams are physical, but well within the rules of physical. And
the question becomes, what's going to be called?
Yeah.
That's and
the
so
ticky tack little
right. So what becomes called, and it does it become the if it's just enough?
I think they allow them to be physical. It's the other stuff that I'm wondering about.
I think. Well, I sure hope so. We've seen some kind of split personalities with the league. You know, in these playoffs where they kind of whack the whistle, so to speak, of the officials a bit after a few games of something, and then they want to see it the other way. So the next thing you know, you're seeing two different games called within the same series, two different styles almost. So
this isn't going to be Toronto where they have a chance to politically go at the National Hockey League. Hey, we don't really like this style that the Bruins are playing up against us.
Game two.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's what. And
those are some senior referees. Brad Meyer didn't. I don't think he made it out of the first round.
And Daniel,
and that was part of it.
Yeah. Well,
because that's another thing. Thought that the level of officiating there in Game Two is unacceptable. Sorry. No, I am gonna. You know, sorry. You went there. I'm going there. You don't have a team that's gonna be bellyaching.
I put the worm
like
in the water. That's all I did.
No, but you know, talk about some of the calls that went against the Bruins earlier in the playoffs. St. Louis has had similar. I mean, just look at the hand pass.
I think
St. Louis has been able to overcome and the adversity. It's part of the whole package
absolutely.
Of adversity that they've been through. The ability to park that. They said all the right things. Now, you know, after game, whatever it was, game three. After game three, it was in overtime. They lose on a hand pass, blatant hand pass.
They don't lose.
and they say all the right things after the game, after, you know, a couple of them pulling nutties and, you know, slamming their sticks off the glass. They calm down, you know, they parked it and said, okay, we're going to move on. You can say the right things, but sometimes it doesn't project to the ice. They went on and won the series right after that. They didn't lose a game after that.
No, and they gave up, two goals in the last three games. But that was led.
That
going
shows
back,
a lot of mental toughness right
go
there.
Go back to our early part of our conversation. Who led that charge, so to speak, of being composed? Craig Berube.
Yeah.
And therefore, it transcends through the locker room. And his personality just, I think, fits this team beautifully. So that was key. They handle it. They actually, I think, use it as a galvanizing force. I really do. I think they use it in that way. So you ask them, what kind of series do I see? I see a six gamer. Yeah, maybe a seven, but I see a six. I also just wonder, let them play. It'll be great then. If it becomes more special teams, I think it favors the Bees.
Nesson, full coverage, obviously, throughout the course of the Stanley Cup Final.
Our pre, our post, you never know. We could go even longer in post. We'll have inside and outside presence. And, you know, it'll be a little bit of a, you know, up in the air. We'll have some things going back and forth, just the way it is in the final. We've got all hands on deck.
All right, so 7 o'clock on Monday, you guys are on
7 o'clock
underway,
on Nesson on Monday, and then immediately, when the game is done, we will go on. Immediately afterwards, we can start our postgame.
All right, we'll look forward to that. Judd and Bob, of course, on the call. Stanley Cup Final Game 1 right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub on Monday night. Don't forget about the pre-party downtown as well. And Jaffe will be with me next week, right, for the prior to Game 3.
Yep.
He's going to be with me in studio for the full two while these guys are on the road for Game 3 next weekend. Best of luck to the Bruins in the final, and we'll talk to you next Saturday here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six World Major Marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.